Welcome to GNT on BHL. Today we talk about Mark Zuckerberg's tour of the country, Spider-Man hits theaters, and Russia can create a super soldier suit. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Lives, Geek Nerd Tech.
Pump up the volume, pump up the volume.
Pump that bass.
Okay.
Hey.
Man, let's go.
Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech.
The back in the 87, baby.
87. The show we break down tech news, nerd culture from black and brown geek perspective.
Oh, yeah.
We're listening to the sounds. Eric B. and Rakim thinking of a master plan.
Fool.
Yeah, this is the game changer of all game changers.
1,000%.
I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined as always by Mr. Keely Shine.
Man, we in the building, man. Paid in Full, baby. 30-year anniversary. This is a classic album.
Oh my God, it's a 30-year anniversary.
1987, baby.
Oh no.
Yeah, man.
That makes me incredibly old.
Yeah, man.
Wow. All the money is spent.
What's my man, I'm drawing a blank, who played Birth of the Nation?
Who? You're talking about your boy, Nate Parker?
Man, he would be a dope Rakim. If he played Rakim.
Oh, he'd be perfect Rakim.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, man.
That would be a fresh movie.
Yeah. Rakim didn't really rape anybody. But...
Whoa.
No.
Man, that is so disrespectful.
That's disrespectful.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not mad. I mean, Nate Parker, I'm not mad at Nate Parker. It's just a separate story. Nate Parker, you know, I think that he made some huge mistakes on that PR tour.
Yeah.
Subsequently, I did see the movie. I'm rooting for the cab, but man, he just was really, has so many opportunities. So many people rooting for him, so many opportunities to do the right thing. And he was like, why y'all sweating me? You know?
So, I get it. I mean, we touched on that a bit on the show maybe last year. Cool. But anyway,
all right.
Rakim, baby.
Rakim, happy anniversary. We had a lot to talk about, including Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook making his tour across the country, which is
your boy,
Zuck, man. he's getting his presidential. He's starting his 2020 presidential campaign early.
Yeah,
he's touring cities now. First of all, I do want to talk about this. So Zuckerberg's on this kind of basic vacation / tour. He's going to all 50 states.
I wouldn't call it a vacation, man.
Well, not
my
vacation.
Man's working.
He's campaigning. I'm sorry. He's going off. I'm saying vacation because he's fishing. He's doing whatever. But the reports that have come back, the first thing he did, I just want to say this, is the first report he reported back from one of his first visits when he first started the tour was very, it was a little tone deaf. I don't know if you read that whole thing when he was basically like, and I'm paraphrasing, but something to the effect of like, you know, I'm touring across America, and there are these things called truck stops where truckers can go in and they can buy food and do laundry. And I thought, this is how real it's something like really like this is how real Americans live. And it's like came off of like, wow, there's truck stops out there.
Sounds like some more hate being spewed out your mouth.
Truckers actually drive around. They get gas.
Gosh.
They eat like real people. Wow, America's great. I'm Zuckerberg.
Hey, man. Well, I feel Zuck is doing an amazing thing. Like, he's boots on ground. Hey, let me travel throughout the country to see how people are living. Let me see. I mean, based on his slogan and what Facebook is supposed to represent about building community and making more social groups happen to have more shareability and uniformity within our lives. He's boots on ground. I want to see what's going on in these different places of the country so that I could be able to develop the platform in a way that's going to, you know, be suitable to where you are.
I agree.
Smart.
And there's nothing wrong with him going out in the world and educating himself and finding out about different pieces of the country and different people. I just caution him to, he needs to just watch this. It's just some tone deafness a little bit. Remember like a long time ago when George W. when Bush 41 was like, I had no idea that what a carton of milk doesn't cost a quarter anymore or whatever. Like, it's just completely out of touch with what's going on. Zuck is doing you gotta be careful. He goes into, you don't want to see him going into going to the neighborhood and be like, oh, they have these things called black eyed peas and collard greens. The community, it's a vibrant community out here. This thing is called "We Only Have Tacos Where I'm From."
Dog, you are just killing this man right now.
I'm gonna fight back.
I'm gonna fight back. Okay. I feel like what he's doing is remarkable, man. Like, especially like using Alaska as a case study.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of governmental support in terms of how the people are able to get, you know, extra income, and the more of a social based community
there.
Because of the natural resources that are in Alaska, the government, you know, gives these buybacks to the people, like $1,000 per person,
yeah,
instead of them having to pay extra taxes or whatever, or having to do, you know, certain things that other states in the country have to do. And so he's like
the permanent fund dividends, what
exactly,
they have in Alaska. Yeah.
And so he's using Alaska as his case study to be able to figure out how he can do that in Facebook or promote that through Facebook. And I think it's smart.
Well, it feels like what white people are proposing and making America great again, making America tech savvy it seems like he's making his case. He's laying the foundation for his presidential run in 2020. Zuck.
I don't think he's gonna run for president, man.
Yeah, why not?
Nah, because then, I mean, what's he gonna do with all his money? It'll be the same thing, like the same conversation we have around Trump.
Trump's already set a precedent. He'll slide over to his wife.
That's true.
Hey, I'll be over here for 8 years. My wife's going to run the company. I'm going to run the country. I'll dip back.
Hey, man, Facebook is running the country.
Exactly.
Stand up, baby.
I don't know. Anyway, so yeah, no, Zuckerberg, he's actually going out and he's seeing the people. He's finding out ways to make Facebook greater and better. And I do applaud him for that, because it's hard to do that from the confines of the Silicon Valley.
That's right.
San Francisco and the Bay Area are literally like nowhere in the country.
That's right.
I mean, it's nothing in San Francisco is normal. Nothing in Metro San Francisco is normal. Nothing in Silicon Valley is normal.
Yeah.
So to even get an idea
boots
how
on ground,
people
dude.
Are living in other parts of the country, you got to go out and see it.
That's right.
So I do applaud him for that. Next, the hacking situation is a very, very, very serious threat, and it's happening, continuing happening, and looks like some hackers are now, we found out that they're actually targeting nuclear power plant operators in the United States. This is like sort of the worst nightmare scenario, the idea of, you know, either state actors or outside people hacking into not just voting machines or our election or anything like that, or not just, some Bitcoin hostage, corporate hostage, but actually terrorism in a way that we will take these nuclear power plants and either shut them down to stop power and stop, you know, folks from being able to have basically attack power grids and shut down power in the major cities, or worst case scenario, melt them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Fukushima,
mm-hmm.
you know, or Three Mile Island style.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary.
I mean, yeah, like we are in the hacking landscape. You know, every other week, you know, someone's getting hacked, a company or government agency or something. And I feel like these are scary times, because the right hacking group with the you know, tapping into something that is really, really, really unsafe, or that could cause massive destruction to, you know, millions of people. I think that it raises the alarm, and so I feel that it's important for, I guess, us with our infrastructure and as we become more technologically dependent to figure out ways to offset that. And I know that with a lot of the nuclear power plants, they have, you know, the computer systems that are separate from, you know, the computer technology that's used to operate the actual plant. So I think that's a good safety net for that.
Right.
Because if the hacker does hack into your personal account and you happen to work your personal computer or accounts and you happen to work for that plant, like, it might be more challenging or maybe impossible for them to then be able to, I guess, jump over into the nuclear power plant computer system. So I think that's what the story is. But then figuring out a better way of preventing even that happening, like, which I don't know if they are able to do, because once you create something, like, someone's going to, you know, figure out how to go around it.
Well, I think the sophistication of the hackers and these hacking attacks, as you put it and as the story highlights, it's really not just about we're hacking as remedial as like the 80s war game style, we're hacking right into the computer, you know, and causing the computer overlay. You can do all kinds of stuff. You can hack it to the operator. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, blackmail him. You can say, I got naked pictures of so-and-so. I'm going to release these, unless you go and do what I do my bidding. You can do, there's all kinds of things you can do mm-hmm. to compromise individuals that are close to the machines and that like, to give you the access. Mm-hmm. Give me all your codes to the nuclear power plant, otherwise I'm going to do XYZ. Yeah, but
those people that work for those plants, they're screened dozens of times. Like those people, yeah. I mean, come, they're not finna go for the okie doke on that. Like if someone has something against them, hey, use it. They're not finna jeopardize the country or jeopardize, you know, their family, you know, for that. Like they would have to take that out. You know what I'm saying? That's why they signed up for that job. It's just like if you are in the military and you become captured in battle, but you're trained to not, you know, give government secrets. Same thing.
Serial number, unless Wonder Woman puts a lasso on you, like he did Steve Trevor. Anyway, that was a Wonder Woman spoiler alert.
Right.
Anyway, okay. We'll see how this thing plays out. But it's definitely the hacking and the ways of hacking are definitely scary. Speaking of scary. That's somewhat, you know, related to hacking. Russia has unveiled this new exoskeleton. You know, it's basically it's Halo. It's all pretty much talked about.
Call of Duty, baby.
Yeah, Call of Duty. It's the exoskeleton. It gives all of their soldiers on the field sort of superhuman capabilities. You know, it makes you know run faster, jump higher,
carry more,
do all the things we talked about. And you know, it's bulletproof. It's all these different things. I mean, if you outfit your whole even like, you know, 100,000 of these, 100,000 of these guys on the ground. Like that's serious.
Yeah,
you know, 100,000 of these guys on the ground. That's a whole other ball game. This is scary.
Yeah, it's a whole other ball game. But we're in the era of drones and dropping bombs and not really having boots on ground. So
I mean,
if you're gonna have this tank, this human tank, you know, running in rank, like I mean that's serious for maybe like an urban situation. Like that would be kind of crazy.
Going in and clearing house to house. You know,
I'm gonna say something on this.
Yes,
if you, my mic's cutting in and out. If you honestly think the U.S. doesn't have something as good, if not better,
they do. It's called a Talo. It's called Tactical Air Light Tails or something. Tactical Air Light Suit. Right. And so that's their version of what Russia has.
Right.
And I think we covered the story before. They've been developing this for a number of years.
Heads up display.
Exactly.
All that Terminator style.
Exactly.
So come on. So let's go. Let's go, Russia. No, I'm kidding. No, it's not a. But yeah, I agree, Stephen. I mean, I think that. Why this is you know, interesting to me is, you know, it's sort of ramping up where we are in warfare and technology as it relates to what we've been playing and thinking about in the new Call of Duty Infinite Wars.
That's
and
right.
Before that, which sort of have all this technology, which people argue this technology is, it's hard to say what's a chicken and egg. Like a lot of the stuff that you use in Call of Duty are stuff that people have done from research as to what the military is already working on, already has, and sort of pushing that out. And so, yeah, we may see this.
I mean, we are seeing this. I don't think we may. This is for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Well, it looks cool. I just don't want to see one of those cats at my door.
Hey, you know? Well, stop doing what you've been doing, bro.
Anyway,
put it down, bro.
Moving on. The people over at Qualcomm are very, very, still very, very pissed at Apple. For what they feel is, well, what they've been complaining about is some proprietary technology that they have that Apple is using, and they've been going back and forth with Apple, and so now they're actually calling for a ban of Apple and iPads made with their six Qualcomm part. I mean, made with their parts that violate six Qualcomm patents. If this is successful, which I doubt it will be, that could put a real damper on all iPhone production and maybe even use.
Yeah, they're going ham.
What do you think about
this?
They're
going ham, man. Like, Qualcomm is a titan. I wouldn't say just like Apple, but, I mean, in terms of providing a lot of Apple's infrastructure and developing the phones, like, the chips that are connected to the cell networks, that's what they provide for them. And them saying, like, we're not effing with you no more, like, that's a huge thing. And to then to make Apple have to pivot, that's a huge pivot, because it's not something you could do overnight. It's like, it's going to take a long time for you to like either find another partner or find another company that's going to give you these assets. And like that could really affect your bottom line, not having, you know, a mutual functional positive relationship. Like the fact that if they win this case, or if they say we're not messing with you, you can't use our stuff, then what happens? What does Apple do?
And the flip side of that, what would be the strategy of Apple? I mean, like, is it, what does Qualcomm want? Does Qualcomm want,
pay me the money, baby?
Pay me the bees.
Yeah.
And you can use my stuff all you want.
That's so right.
I mean, I don't know
that. You ain't paying me enough money.
I know that Apple can afford to not do that unless they can, they can source, develop, or get competitive technology, which it doesn't seem like that's possible.
Or unless they make a new technology.
Yeah, I mean, Apple has resources to do that. Maybe they've been working on that. Maybe they're buying their time to work on their own version of this, to reverse engineer Qualcomm stuff. But even if you do it, can you mass produce it? Can it be yours? I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
And this is not the first like strike. It's not the first battle. Oh, like they've been going back and forth. But I'm talking about
Qualcomm.
Apple and Qualcomm. They've been going back and forth. Like, this is not the first time either one of them have sued each other. So this is like kind of like a ping pong match. Like, who can have the best leverage? And I think, you know, like I said, Qualcomm's trying to say, you know what? We're gonna go big. Wow. We're gonna go big. We're gonna pull it all back.
Wow.
So.
Interesting. We'll see. We'll see how that all plays out. Speaking of going big, I want to talk about our folks over at Blue Apron, our friends at Blue Apron. Blue Apron's a company that gives you some fantastic restaurant quality and Food Network and restaurant quality foods that you can prepare at your house for like less than $10 per meal per person. And it actually is fun to do if you like to cook. You know, even if you don't know how to cook at all, you can use this Blue Apron, cook yourself some meals, have them see what they look like. You know, these beautiful prepared meals, and they are always delicious.
That's right.
What it is Blue Apron takes these super great ingredients. They use this seafood that's sustainably sourced. They use this beef and chicken that are responsibly raised.
Let's go, baby.
Produce is sourced by farms that practice regenerative farming. So you know that. It's fresh, and also using the best pack practices. They've got this wonderful distribution method where they can bring all the stuff to your house that is ready to go. The meat is sort of frozen, it's dry ice, and the meat is great. The veggies are fresh. The ingredients are all portioned out, ready to go. You get your menu card. You make this stuff up. You cook it up, and it's beautifully portioned, and it's
delicious. You're feeling great.
Yeah, they got some great meals. I mean, like, check this out. How do you feel about seared chicken, creamy pasta with summer squash and sweet peppers?
I feel great about it.
All right. Creamy shrimp rolls with quick pickles and sweet potato wedges.
Sign me up, baby.
How about chili butter steaks with Parmesan?
I'm going to make that for the wife.
Chili butter steak with Parmesan potatoes and spinach.
Can't match it.
Chili butter steaks. So that's the kind of stuff.
That's dope.
That's stuff that you make with Blue Apron. It's really great stuff. It's fantastic. You can get them to sign up, and you can try them out if you use one of our promo codes. You can go up. You can check out Blue Apron. You get this week's menu and get the first three meals for free with free shipping just by going to blueapron.com/geek.
That's a good deal.
blueapron.com/geek. You'll love how it feels, tastes. You'll be able to create great home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/geek. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
That's fresh, man.
Check that out.
100.
So, moving on. We talk a lot about this new augmented reality technology and other things. There's a... they're talking about this cell phone situation that's going to incorporate this holographic technology, which will allow, I'm assuming, things to be broadcast in sort of 3D or 3D images, either using glasses or not glasses. This seems to be the future. I've seen versions of this where, like, this... Your iPhone projected on a watch onto your arm. Mm-hmm. You're using it on your arm, on your skin. I've seen versions where, like we saw at CES, where you're typing in the air and some augmented keyboard projected, or something's projected onto a ground.
Right.
This seems like the future. What do you think about this technology?
I mean, I think,
or is it gimmicky?
I think that, you know, virtual reality, you know, augmented reality, and figuring out ways to, you know, have, you know, visual representation of things in a holographic technology is the future, but I don't know if it is this product that Red is developing. And especially with the price point, we're talking about a phone that costs $1,500. Like, I think it is kind of gimmicky. Yeah. Like they're going to have to scale that back a bit for it to be of any interest. But I like the fact that, hey, I don't have to have any dependency on wearing, you know, 3D glasses to be able to have more of an immersive experience, and to be able to have something that's literally in front of me that does have the 3D technology and has more even with the audio, even with the sound, like it's more like I said, immersive. Like it's really hitting all your senses in a different, unique way. So I think that's cool, but I don't see this product being something that's like earth shattering, you know, moving the needle in any way. Like, it's interesting that Red is actually getting in this business. I mean, I know that they're known for making, you know, cinema cameras and you know, lenses and of that nature. But this is an interesting play for them. I wonder what the big game is. Like, why they're even trying to get into this marketplace? Because it's already saturated, and you already have these enormous big players. So it's like, what is the real strategy for you doing
this? It's always something that's coming down the road. I think that you have to get into the marketplace and to be able to have it establish something so you can either launch the technology that you have coming down the road or you see coming down the road. So the answer to your question is, I guess this is something that we will have to remain to be seen.
Yeah.
Maybe Red's got some holographic camera they're about to drop on us.
Good luck.
Yeah, I mean, you know. I mean, Red, who knows what's going on over in Red Studios over there.
Hey.
Coinga.
Yeah.
There is this new self-driving truck. We talk about this all the time. We knew this was coming, so the autonomous driving truck.
That's right.
A company called InRide has this new truck, which actually is dope because it's no room for the driver. It's a weird-looking thing. It looks like where you would see the cab is just more space.
That's right.
The way it's designed.
Well, there is no cab.
There is no cab.
But like, it's completely gone.
Yeah, where you would see it. And it's designed like a typical 18-wheeler, but it's really more like nine wheels. Like a nine-wheeler. Giant,
carry 20 tons.
20 tons.
Yeah,
it looks. Now talk about what's going to happen when. I mean, I imagine if there's a cat or a dog or anything in the road where that thing's barreling down, is he going to stop? Is he going to swerve with precious cargo?
Yeah, it's got to have some type of evasive technology in it.
Because
if it's, I mean, what if it's a car? Like, it has to be able to have some type of range and be able to see, okay, there's something blocking the road. Let me slow down or let me pivot to the left or right.
So you can put a cow catcher on it.
There you go. solves all problems.
It solves all the problems.
But also, what like this is, you know, reminds me, like, what if it's carrying some you know, some really precious cargo or something valuable, and people are trying to hijack this truck? Like, does this make it more hijackable? Can you pull a truck in front of it? It stops.
While it stopped, you cut
inside of it. There's no driver.
What is a driver going to do if I hijack the vehicle? Like, what's the difference? Like, he has to drive the car. He's not going to pull out an AK and be driving the big rig.
Yeah.
Like, so.
But it's definitely. We'll see.
I mean, I think this is pretty cool because we talk about, this as it relates to like the job market. And when we talk about Google developing autonomous vehicles, Uber is also in this space, and like what this means for, like, you know, hardworking people that actually feed their families this way. So I think that is what's most interesting to me, like how we'll offset that if we do have this technology on the road within the next 5 years. Where do those jobs go? How do people feed their families? Like, what happens? Because that if this works in this part of the sector, transportation sector, like, it's only going to give more validity for it to work in other parts. And so, again, like, how do we address how people feed their families if we have a dependency on this?
Yeah. And also the things that what they're using for, like, they're places around the world that are these, especially in these European roads where you, it's hard for these guys, these creakety, like, mountainside roads where it's very dangerous for drivers to try to navigate, whereas this dude can just whip through it. Also, what's interesting about it, which is kind of cool, is, you know, no headlights. You don't need headlights for this thing. No, it's got that weird little, like, thing up front, but it looks like it's a big glowing, like, it's got these LED things that are around it, all that stuff, so other drivers can see it, but it doesn't need to see the road, which is this weird, creepy thing.
Well,
so.
Yeah, speaking of jobs, though, DICE is a leading tech career hub and champion for the technological professional and citizen of the tech community. And have you, like, ever wondered about your next role or where you're going with your career, bro? You ever wonder about it?
Every day.
Of course. Everyone does. Like, you got to be on top of things. But DICE can provide that insight and guidance guidance about, you know, different directions based on your skill sets, your experiences, and even where you're located, where you are geographically. They'll show you which skills you need to make, you know, the move to jump to the next level of your career, and like what other things are in the pathway that might require more, you know, might require more for you to revisit and get more skills on. So DICE has been connecting tech pros with job opportunities for over 20 years now. They're a full-blown career hub delivering the tools and resources you need to manage your career. Over 70,000 tech jobs ranging from software development, UX, and to project management. There's tremendous amounts of insights around the job market and skills that are hot. And also they provide and tell you which ones are kind of cooling off. So dope. It's giving you great guidance and stuff. Salary reports and tools to fully understand how you stack up. DICE is your advocate for navigating your career. Right. Whether that means, you know, finding the next job or getting you the next pay raise or informing you what your next career move, DICE is the place to be. And so learn more about DICE at dice.com/canyouhackit. Once again, that's learn more about dice.com/canyouhackit and hack your career with DICE.
That's right. I'm adding my own tagline to this. Ready?
No, please don't.
Roll them dice.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know what that means. that's right. I'm available at DICE if you need me to write some copy for you. I'm available.
Oh no.
Roll them dice. I think it's a really fantastic way to sort of match those skills to those jobs.
Absolutely.
I think it's really, really a long overdue. I'm glad someone thought of it. Speaking of things that are long overdue, this year the World Cup is coming, and not this year, but it's coming. 2018, big year for the World Cup, as we see every 4 years. It was 16 years ago it sort of really blew up in this country. Then 8 years ago was like crazy. 4 years ago was even more insane. And they anticipate, you know, in this country and in all of the world, the 2018 World Cup will be even bigger and better than ever. So what you have Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook all scrambling to gobble up the rights for highlights. Now, usually this is reserved for, you know, the Foxes of the world, other big players who want to spend those Bs and retain those exclusive rights to replay highlights and especially games themselves. But now Facebook, Twitter, and Snap aren't necessarily saying we want to stream games.
Yeah.
They just want to show highlights. And
of course,
they can build an entire industry around highlights and highlight shows and sharing these things and back and forth of the World Cup, and it's the smartest thing ever, and they're all scrambling to do it. And what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, they have to, because you got to think, most of the younger generation, millennials, aren't watching TV like that. The TV viewing habits have shifted. People in that age demographic are consuming content on their tablets and on their cell phones. So, and a lot of it is, hey, give me the information quick, just like it is on Twitter. I just want the highlights of the game. I don't necessarily have to watch the whole game or see the whole tournament. So I think it's very smart because it's shareable. You're getting the best moments. You're kind of like compressing everything down to these smaller, consumable, digestible bites. And I think that's perfect for platforms like Snapchat, like Facebook and Twitter. And we've seen many times before, you know, social media platforms trying to get into this business. Twitter, obviously, you know, NFL and NBA, you could see, you know, games on there, you could see highlights on there. So I think this is just a further step to kind of solidify that, and especially with, you know, the World Cup being one of the largest viewed sporting event ever, you know, in history. So
yeah, I think it's fantastic. So what platform would you prefer to would you go Twitter, Facebook, or Snapchat if you're a betting man right now? This is, you have, I've given you $100 million. Where would you take your $100 million? What platform?
I would say for exactly for the World Cup or for
World,
just
any World Cup.
Yeah,
World
I would
Cup.
Say Twitter, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
I think Twitter works the best for this.
All right.
I think other sports, I might have a different answer, but I think for this, I think I would say Twitter or Facebook, because this is a global thing, and I think obviously Snapchat isn't as globally. Dominant like Facebook is, and I think Twitter would come second. So I would change my answer to Facebook, to be honest. What about you?
I would definitely say Facebook or Twitter. I agree with you 100%. I think Twitter's really making some aggressive moves to be able to be a better platform for sports and these kind of, like, the thing about Twitter is, you know, they're really trying to still own the conversation that's happening in that moment, and then being able to augment that conversation with actual clips and highlights and things and actually talk about it. I mean, they have that basketball recap show, which I'm not sure how that did with the four white guys, you know, but I'm not sure how that worked. But I don't know. I like Twitter. We'll see.
Yeah. Ain't nobody messing with Facebook and make 2 billion users though.
Oh, man. We'll see what Russia has to say about that in 2018.
Russia?
Yeah, Russia's gonna add another 100,000 users to that during the election, and then I don't know.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, Jay-Z's 444 album, it dropped. It's fantastic. We didn't even talk about it. Did we talk about it?
No.
Okay. So it dropped. I got it at midnight, maybe Eastern. I got midnight Eastern on that last Thursday. It's been a while for a week.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I still love it. And what'd you think?
I think it was awesome. I think, you know, as a body of work, I think it was great. We talked about, you know, who would be on the album in terms of his features. I'm glad that it was minimal.
Yeah.
And just the lyrical content and where he is in his career and his ability to now talk about things that are relevant, socially, you know, relevant. And I think it's good to see an artist take those type of leaps to make that type of growth. We haven't necessarily seen Jay-Z do that. So an artist at that caliber and level to be able to start making, you know, be more of an advocate for things and kind of like challenge his listeners to grow up with him, I think is a great thing. That's to me what the power of an artist is and does. And so he's living proof of that. And just how he rolled it out, you know, I think it was great. Great social experiment. And partnering, you know, obviously Sprint owns a 30% of Tidal, and just how he kind of created kind of like a wall, like a firewall, like, hey, you're not getting this. This is really exclusive. Like, no leaks, and it's exclusive, and just drove like the interest, drove the awareness, drove the demand. I think it's super smart, very smart.
It's also interesting because I think most people knew and kind of waited that for this to be non-exclusive and it to be whatever. But what's interesting to me is how many people, including myself and you, said, I know it's going to be available in a week or a couple of weeks, but I need it right now. And I was one of those people. And so that's really also shows the power of Jay-Z, you know, like that he can do that and say that. The RIAA, Recognition Association of America, I think that's what that is. It's already certified at platinum.
Yeah. Streams, though, not sales.
Streams. But we'll see how this goes. But now the story here is, my take's now, I agree with you 1,000%. Growing up Jay-Z is exactly what I want from a 48-year-old Jay-Z. I don't feel like there's any, like, club bangers or dance songs on it or whatever like that, but
like Chuck D said, like, what do you expect from a 48-year-old to be talking about club records? What club does that exist?
Exactly. I agree, and I think that, like, but a very mature, but everything, I just really just struck by, you know, the hypnotic quality of his voice and lyrics. Also, obviously the content of what he's saying is great. So it really, really makes me zone into, like, what he's talking about, which is actually something personal, artful, interpersonal, educational, all the above. And then that juxtaposed against whatever No ID is doing, which is, like, ridiculous to me. I think musically and sonically, it's like, it's a masterpiece. And I think when I think about some of those songs, specifically the story of OJ, like, I literally can't get it out of my head. And I don't mean it like I can't get it out of my head from, like, the fact that, like, I'm humming it over and over again, but something about that mix of Four Women by Nina Simone and what that song, the weight of what that song means juxtaposed against his sort of what he's talking about in this song, the power of those two things mixed, it has this very haunting, hypnotic, like, poignant quality that I just, I can't stop thinking about it for the last, just that song alone.
Yeah.
And the rest is fantastic. So it's really a masterpiece for me.
I think it's awesome too. Not to like kill this topic, but it's the first time Jay-Z has only gone to one producer for an entire album.
Usually
he'll have multiple producers and musicians working on the album, but he and No ID was a pure collaboration. I think they recorded over 40 songs, I believe. Distilled it down to 10. 40 minutes worth of music. And
no,
I mean,
force. 40 songs, 40 minutes.
4-4-4. So, yeah, I mean, I think just the strategy involved in all this, and like I said, again, the social media play, the marketing play, all of it was just perfectly executed. And, I mean, now, like, he's opening up to now, I mean, this story is about now, you know, the other, not even, I don't think Spotify has it yet, but
no,
now
Spotify.
That Apple Music
Apple,
has it now.
Amazon and Google Play.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so everyone's going to be able to get it, so check it out yourself. In a competing story, your boy Yeezy has terminated his deal with Tidal. The same time that Jay releases his album and then, you know, lied at Yeezy's, like, I don't want to do exclusive title anymore.
Kill Jay-Z, that line in there for Yeezy.
Yeah, what do you think that's about? Is that business decision? Are you reading anything into that in terms of personal relationship?
No, it's definitely personal. It's definitely personal. I mean, clearly they're at odds. Clearly they're not, you know, throwing back shots with each other anymore. Or even in the studio creating anymore. They're not doing anything. The relationship
Where's my watch to throw to?
Exactly. So I think that this, I mean, apparently when Yeezy was doing Pablo and made that an exclusive on Tidal, he signed a deal that they would give him, if he reached a certain amount of streams, they would give him $1 million. Or it was a million and some change, and he never got paid that $1 million. And so he's saying, hey, I want to be able to sever ties and break the deal. Like, you guys didn't pay me. Like, I might even sue you. Like, even went that far to say that. So I think it's just interesting that he would make that move when Jay-Z's album comes out and all this fanfare is high. And of course, you know, in the song Kill Jay-Z, he had those lines directed towards Kanye. It just feels like this is a major shot. Like, hey, and then I hear that it's actually true. Like, like Tidal is in breach of contract. They didn't pay the $1 million. Like, that's not a good look. Paying artists?
Like, not paying artists when their whole thing is like, this is for artists.
Exactly.
And all the preaching you're doing and songs like, you know, and songs like Smile and Story of OJ about sort of like, you know, black wealth.
Autonomy.
And
freedom.
Autonomy, right. And like supporting other artists and supporting other people like Puffy and Ciroc. And it's how you do Kanye. So we'll see. There's a lot of sides of the story. It'll be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. But yeah, man, I don't know. We'll see what Kanye has to say about all this.
And last note about this, it's more of like the business, the marketing, the social element of it. Like, what do you think about, I mean, obviously Sprint, you know, like a telephone carrier investing into a streaming platform, owning a piece of a streaming platform. And like, what do you think about this and the future of this? Do you think other companies will try to do something similar to this? Do you think Spotify has an angle to partner with a company like this?
Absolutely. Like, because I think ultimately all these what you want, so you have technology companies, you have communications companies, and then you have entertainment/ broadcasting companies, right? Mm-hmm. The goal for all these people are to all be one and the same. For Amazon, you want to be all those and you want to sell shit too. But like, not everyone can be Apple. Apple is a consumer electronics company. They're also they do everything but the communications end of it. And for Sprint, I'm thinking of like a Comcast, who is a communications company who now divested himself in entertainment with buying NBC Universal. Mm-hmm. Like, Sprint wants to do that. Sprint's like, I want to do that, Comcast. Mm-hmm. Like, why can't we own a studio? Mm-hmm. Or why can't we have a streaming service? So I think Sprint's next move would be like, oh, we may buy Sony. We may buy MGM.
Yeah.
Maybe Sprint is going to be doing, you know, TV and movies as well as music and streaming. Like, mm-hmm. that's where they want to be because they have the distribution base just like Comcast Cable did.
And so do you think it's fair play that because Sprint has ownership and Tidal that you can't get certain pieces of content because you're not signed up to Sprint?
No, and I think that's where it gets to be weird. I think that that using those, pulling those levers or twisting those arms, I think that's dangerous from a PR perspective. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a way to isolate a lot of people,
right?
Because it feels like you're manipulating the fact that you have this exclusivity. Mm-hmm. It's an age-old marketing play. Hey, if you wanna hear Jay-Z and all the cool people, join Sprint.
Yep.
Can't hear that shit on Verizon.
Yep.
Like, I mean, I get that. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing as we're talking about with net neutrality.
Exactly. Hey, that's exactly right.
You want to watch Game of Thrones? You better sign for Comcast.
Yep.
Or
your version is going to be pixelated.
Or exactly. You'll be like seeing them dragons and Khaleesi's boobies in pixelation.
Right.
But the other thing is, and last but not least, the one that the biggest, you know, most egregious use of this as a Dodger fan is what Time Warner's done with the Dodgers. You know, like if you... I'm sorry.
I'm just playing.
What the Time Warner Spectrum has done with the Dodgers. If you don't sign up for their cable service, you can't watch the Dodgers.
And the Lakers.
So here in L.A., like, you got DirecTV, you got AT&T. Hope you're not a Dodger or Laker fan. Yeah. Too bad.
That's more similar.
That is so... I don't know. I don't know how but they, you know, this is the corporate way. They're gonna bully their way in there, and we have to either bend or revolt.
You're saying Jay-Z's the bully?
I don't know. Either revolt or fall in line. We're out of time, so I want to just run through these last few companies. A couple of stories. I want to do Spider-Man story, And I want to be able to, I'm going to skip the GE Healthcare. But
what?
Spider-Man Homecoming is coming out today, and we're really excited about that. It's just there's a few scenes in the trailer that you're not going to see. This is a long trend that you seem to see, like what happened in Rogue One. Happened mm-hmm. a lot of movies where you see all these scenes in the trailers you're really excited about, and then they don't show up. There's one scene in particular with Tony Stark and Spider-Man flying together. I guess that's not in the movie, but right. it's just more of a thing in the marketing to get people to know that, hey, this is we're bridging Marvel and Spider-Man. So what do you think about using images and things to sell a movie to get you come to the theater that aren't in the movie?
I think it's great.
Fine with that.
I think it's great because they're marketing materials, and you want right. to be able to, you know, promote the product in the best way. And like, if I'm promoting milk, like, yeah, should I give you a sample of the milk? Like, yeah. No, it's a milk carton, right? So I could put whatever I want on the milk carton. Or if it's a Wheaties right. box, I'm going to put Michael Jordan on there. Doesn't mean right. that it's really going to make you play like Michael Jordan.
Right.
Like, but I think it's fine because it gives the trailer maker more creativity. And I feel like I don't want to see everything in the trailer.
Yeah.
Like, don't give me the hottest clips. Like,
I don't want to see that either.
Yeah, so
can you manipulate stuff? Like if I was going to do a movie right now, as a bad example, with Denzel and Colin Farrell doing a movie right now, and they don't have any scenes together.
Uh-huh.
If I shot a scene special with them going face to face, nose to nose, and put that in the trailer, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see the scene where they go nose to nose, and it's not in there. I'm trying to market the movie.
I think that's different because as it relates to the MCU, like it's a part of the universe that you know that Spider-Man and Iron Man are going to fly together. That's in the comics. Like they're going to work together in some capacity. So maybe that's not in this movie, but you know that that's feasible. Like versus your example, that's not even feasible if the movie doesn't allow for that. But I feel like with Civil War, they were flying together. They were they did have scenes together. So I think that's fair.
You don't see this on screen, but we have to imagine at some point they're flying together. So this is a scene that we.
So because they're flying together in the trailer, it makes me want to go see the movie. And because I don't see that, now I hate the movie.
No, I hate the movie, but I'm like, where's that scene? That looked dope.
Look on the trailer.
and not only that, it's on the posters.
Okay.
It's in the posters with Iron Man flying and like he's anyway, whatever. It's interesting debate and how misleading it is or isn't versus marketing tools versus actual intellectual property. And I guess once you turn in your thing you've made, like there's a whole other department that comes in and says, this is great. How can we sell it? And they may cut up something totally different.
And they that process might already be going before the movie's even done.
Yeah, of course.
Like, especially with the Marvel movies.
That happens.
So.
That happens often. So, anyway, this is interesting. We'll see how that plays out. Really quick, I just want to give a shout out to our girl, Ava DuVernay. She's got this deal with Netflix. She's bringing a 5-part series to Netflix. Is it 5-part? Yeah, 5-part series on the Central Park 5 that mm-hmm. she wrote and directed, which is dope. Like, she wrote and directed. When did she have time to do that, by the way?
Writing and directing.
Oh, writing and directing. She's going to write and direct it because she's like so busy doing so much stuff, but like this is very interesting because I've said for people who don't know Central Park 5, there's a young group of black men who got accused of brutally sort of raping this young woman, and it was a very sort of like racialized thing, like a pack
colorized.
Of young black men are roaming around all over Central Park raping white women, and it was made famous by our President Donald Trump, who came out
so they should be executed.
They should be executed, and have put a full page ad out and said it's people, and then of course it turns out DNA evidence proved years later after they were in jail.
Right. And these weren't men. These were young boys.
Young boys.
Young adults.
DNA proves that it actually was not them. And they're exonerated, but you know, a lot of people still, the damage was done in terms of like how young black men and all black men were portrayed at the time.
Right.
Damage was done that our real estate mogul, now President Donald Trump, has still to this day never apologized for that, never publicly apologized, and when I pushed on it and said he doubles down on it.
Yeah,
he
still
does everything else. So I think it's a relevant story. It's interesting, and I'm glad it's coming out in 2019.
I think it's relevant because it's a great follow up to her documentary, like award nominated documentary for 13, uh-huh. which is on Netflix. To be able to have this as the follow up, I think is pretty cool. I'm not sure if this is scripted or if this is like a documentary.
So this is written and directed, but that doesn't mean. I guess that doesn't mean.
Yeah, I mean,
it feels like it's.
I would assume that it's scripted.
Assume it's scripted,
but it also says that each episode is about each of the the boys, each of the men. So
and then maybe the fifth one is how they come together. That'd be interesting. We'll see it conceptually. Last but not least, this is really incredibly dope, smart, poignant, lovely, wonderful Lego campaign that's been floating around in Prince Kip festivals in Cannes. It's basically Lego, We Build the Future. It shows these really young, adorable kids inside these Legos making things like astronauts and rock stars and fire people, and it's kids of all different sort of races and creeds, and it is just really, really marvelously executed and conceived, and I just want to give a shout out to it. I think it's dope.
Super dope. I mean, yeah. And I think this is where, you know, advertising, you know, has the chance to make a huge cultural statement, and this is perfect blend of creativity and storytelling, and I just love the concept. Like, you know, your dreams, like you become your dream, you know, and the fact that you're creating with these Lego blocks and you're creating what you want to be, like that's just an awesome, symbolic, powerful statement, and it's inspirational. I think it's dope.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it. That's all we got. I'm trying to see Spider-Man tonight. Listen to more 444. What about you?
Yeah, man. I just want the a quick add-on that Stan Lee's wife died today, I believe.
Oh yeah, yesterday. Yeah.
Oh, it's today.
Oh, it's today.
Yeah.
Oh,
maybe I'm mistaken.
I think it was yesterday because I remember it came.
It
through.
Was yesterday.
Okay. Yesterday. Okay. Yeah. They're married for 69 years. This would have been their 70th year of marriage. They got married in 1947. They didn't quite make it to their wedding anniversary, but so 69, almost 70 years of marriage. They've been married longer than my mother's been alive. They got married the year my mother was born. Sorry to out your mom. So woo! 70. But yeah, that's incredible. And you know, Stan Lee means a lot to the Marvel Universe, as does his to the creative cultural universe, I should say. Yep. Super progressive guy, and his wife was the same. I mean, obviously they're championed so many things in the 60s and in civil rights and equality, and also like bringing you know, characters we haven't seen to the screen of multiple genders and race, and although he had some sort of questionable things in the 60s, but like, you know, the heart wasn't always in the right place, and they always seemed at the forefront of that, and I guess she'll be missed. That's all I got to say about that.
Thanks, bro. Thanks for taking that one.
No,
it's all good.
No, I mean,
yeah. R.I.P. baby.
I don't know. You said she died. I'm like, yeah, here's a eulogy.
Right, pretty much.
I don't know why.
My goodness. Let's go, baby.
So, yeah, that's that.
Yeah. Where can they find you, man?
You know, at Joe K. Braswell, Twitter, Instagram. Now I draw a blank.
They can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine.
And that's it. We will be back next week with more geek nerd tech. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Booyah! From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.